Win £100,000 with Paddy's Pick 5. Pick 5 winners from our 5 races to win. The jackpot must be won this week. Play for free every Saturday. Pick 5 with Paddy Power.
Welcome along to the From the Horses Mouth podcast with myself, Patrick Connelly. It's the final big flat day on the turf this season. Yes, we do have the virtual maturity to come, but realistically, this is the big day. And the man who's coughing in the background is Rory De Largay. Rory, I was going to say, how are you, Rory? But you may have given the game away there.
I muted myself a second too late, didn't I? Yeah, I've picked up a cold on top of all my other woes. So I shall be using the mute button frequently. I'm being told to unmute myself at least 3 times, I would imagine, through this.
No, you're a true professional at this stage. But look, it's the time of season. It is that time of season to be getting, picking up those calls. Yeah, as I said, it is probably the last big day of the flat turf season, certainly here in the Ireland of the UK. And that means we've given Ruby the weekend off, but that means he's back. Ladies and gentlemen, hold your applause. Frank Hickey enters the fray. How are you, Frank?
I'm not too bad. I'm sporting, I think, what'll be a black eye maybe tomorrow.
Well,
Oliver came into me at maybe 5 o'clock yesterday morning, hopped into the bed and managed to give me a kick straight into the eye.
It's great to have you back, Frank, as always. And it's nice to get Ruby Walsh, the grumpus. Yeah, I had him actually on Paddy Power Television on Tuesday. We had our day at Punchestown. So I said, oh, great, Ruby, you're here. Come on, PPTV, and we'll chat about Willie Mullins' horses. And he just gave out stink about prices for about 20 minutes. And
can I just say that I'm really honoured to be on the Patrick Kennedy podcast as well? I was listening last week.
I don't get it.
Really struggled to find it on iTunes or wherever.
There is no Patrick Connelly podcast.
Yeah. Oh, you're on about it. Yeah.
It's my show. It's my show.
They come back here and put you in your place. That's the main reason I'm back.
Fair enough. Dead right, Frank. Yeah, dead right. Okay, look, it's not my show. We know that. It's very much the Frank Hickey, Rory De Largay show today, and Ruby Walsh when he's on. We've got a great weekend of racing, obviously highlighted by Quipco Champions Day at Ascot. There's some interesting racing at Leopardstown as well. There's the American Grand National of Fair Hills, as well, Far Hills even, where the Shark, John Joseph Hanlon's got a runner in Hewick, prepping for the Gold Cup there. Before I bring the lads' thoughts in on all the racing, a reminder, Paddy's Pick 5. Oh my God, lads. Last week, we had 2 punters get through to the last round. It's a free shot at 100 grand. Remember, absolutely free to play. Pick 5 winners from the selected races. You can check out what those races are. I'll remind you shortly, but they are available to check on the show notes. And 2 lads got through to the last leg. And of course, that horse was beaten. They would have shared 50 grand. This week, we're going to make it hopefully a little bit easier. It's certainly easy to read out. It's basically race 2, 3, 4, 5 and 6 at Ascot. So basically, don't forget about the Long Distance Cup, and it's every other race starting from the second race, the 2 o'clock, through to the Balmoral Handicap. Nice and easy. Nice finish, isn't it, Frank, the Balmoral Handicap?
Very straightforward this year.
All right, lads, let's get stuck into Ascot. Let's hopefully try and find a few winners. So we kick off with the 125. It is the Long Distance Cup over 2 miles. And for once, I'm delighted to say that Trushan will run in this race. We're going to talk about him. He's the 15-8 favourite at the prices, unless he picks up a bloody stone bruise between now and the off. But he's going to get his ground. He's definitely going to run. He's 15-8. Eldroff is 5-2. Fran Berry, who gave us Waterville a week ago at 10s, is now 3-1. It's 8-1 Coltrane, 10-1 Bar. Right, Frank, you're back. Give us a winner in the Long Distance.
Yeah, it's very difficult to have too much confidence in Trushan off the back of that run. The Doncaster Cup when beaten the neck by Coltrane. Liz Moore was only another head behind in third, and well, has been well beaten since, as has the 4th and 5th. So he was definitely well below form, and you couldn't use the ground as an excuse, I don't think. So I'd be, you know, I could be made a fool, and he 7-4 could be a massive price, but just on what he did at Doncaster, I'd be willing to take him on. Waterville wasn't a second favorite early in the week, and you know, while he has potential, you have to remember, and he did very well to win the Irish Czar, which even looking at sections, he got a massive upgrade. But even allowing for that, he was winning off 99, getting a 3-year-old allowance. And this, you know, straight into Group 1, I think it's a big step up for all his potential. And I think it's getting to more its correct price now, but Eldroff was the one I liked. he did well to win the Queen's Vase at the Royal Meeting. I think he just found the step back in the trip in the Grand Prix de Paris against him in a mile and a half. That race has worked out relatively well. And I thought he did it very nicely in the Ledger itself. He was very well backed as well. I probably read into the French run a little bit too much when pricing for the Ledger, and wasn't probably a great result for us. And I thought it was impressive. And, you know, the promoted third, and was it Hel Habib, finished sixth. The two of them fought out a listed race subsequently. So there's a little bit of substance to the form. And while he's getting to close to what I thought would be his price, I think he was 4-1 maybe earlier in the week. I'd take a chance on him just with the doubts about Truchin.
Fair enough. Elder Eldroff for Frank Hickey. A reminder, by the way, if you're playing this on the Paddy Power app or on Paddy Power Online, have a fiver in this race and we'll give you a free fiver to play with in the Champion Stakes as a nice little gift for you. Stick it on Elder Eldroff if you want. All right, Rory, the Long Distance Cup. Frank called it a Group 1. I'm going to correct him. Sorry, Frank. Right. It's my show. It's
they
a Group 2.
Group one,
but it really is a Group 1. I mean, it's a Rory, this is a Group 1 race, just Group 2 in name, really, right? And unmute yourself. That's warning number one.
The thing about the new races at Ascot is they can't start off as Group 1s. So you've got to have Group 2 status to start with. So the Champion Sprint has only been a Group 1 for a few years, and no doubt the Long Distance Cup will be a Group 1 very shortly. But at the moment, we're still waiting for that upgrade to come along. I very much take Frank's point about Truchin. He wasn't close to his best last time. And not just that he didn't quite run to form, but he looked slightly wayward in the race. Alan King put that down to the fact that he raced them on ground too fast for him at Goodwood. You know, he hummed and hawed about running at Goodwood, and he did. And it was good to firm in the end. It wasn't, you know, they thought it was slightly softer than that. And Kingy thought that he felt the ground and he wouldn't let himself down, even though it was good to soft at Doncaster. And therefore, that's why he ran below form. Now, it's a difficult call with him because everything he'd done prior to that had been very positive. But if, you know, Alan King has been very keen not to run him in fast ground, and he's got a lot of stick for that as well. And that's a point I'd like to touch on as well. People have gone, oh, King, he always talks about running this horse and then doesn't run him. He's run 5 times in each of the last 3 seasons. The point with him is he needs digging the ground. And several times when he's been due to run, there's been rain forecast that hasn't arrived. So I think Alan King's got far too much abuse over not running Truchin when you consider that he runs Truchin plenty often enough. And he's also more than happy to run Truchin in handicaps, which he's done for the last 2 years. There aren't many trainers out there who would run a Group 1 stayer or a Group 1 middle distance horse in handicaps. So I think Kingy deserves a lot more praise than the brickbats he's been getting for this. I'm still inclined to be with Truchin just because I saw someone tweet the other day, he must be the most hated horse in training now, which again is a bizarre thing to think that you would resent the horse for the fact that he's been pulled out of a couple of races because of the ground.
It's Twitter, Rory. That's Twitter.
That is Twitter. But the interesting thing is now he should be 6-4 in form terms, and he's 15-8 at Paddy Power. I reckon you're going to get 9-4 or 5-2 on Saturday. And while I wouldn't be mad to play in the race at the moment, I'd put him in 7-4 around that. So 15-8 is, you know, you're getting very marginal value. But if he does get bigger, if he goes 9-4, 5-2, then I would step in because I think there could be an overreaction to that defeat last time out, or indeed just a reaction to the fact that people are now, you know, being very anti-Truchin because of the fact that, you know, there's always a question mark about whether he will run just because he needs digging the ground. Whatever the ground is like at Ascot on Saturday, it's going to have digging. It's either going to be good to soft or it's going to be soft. So he will run. The last run is a slight concern, but you've got to put a value in that and you've got to buy horses at the right price. So I'm hoping he goes 9-4 or bigger and then I'd be with him. At 15-8, I'm kind of neutral, but I'm not at all confident fielding against him at that price. So it's Truchin or nothing for me.
Fair enough. Okay, so Truchin at the right price, essentially. Haters gotta hate, Rory. Afraid to say when it comes to Twitter. Yeah, Truchin, he certainly has caught. I think probably the Racing Post didn't help when they said
the greatest performance of all time.
Lads.
And that, again, not really his fault that you get that kind of that idiotic headline, but there you go.
you can't be suggesting there's hate on Twitter and people overreact, are you?
It's one of the most measured social media places in the world. It's all about measured responses, pausing, thinking, taking some time and responding in a well-mannered way.
It was fairly some viewing yesterday on Twitter, wasn't it?
Oh, hang on. I wasn't allowed to talk about this on the pod with Fran earlier on today, so I'm definitely not going to talk about it with Frank. Moving on to the 2 o'clock.
Just everyone just roll their eyes and that'll be done.
The roll eye emoji is still underused. The 2 o'clock at Ascot is the Champion Sprint Stakes. This is over 6 furlongs, and we are going to go a cracking 5 places in this race instead of 3. So that's really good each way value. Creative Force for Buick and Appleby. Well, we know he likes this race. He's the 3-1 favorite at the time of recording, just from Rohan, who continued his love affair with the track when winning last mountain. Really good style at 130. Kinross is 6-1, a surprise entrant, I suppose some might say, for Beckett and Dettori. 8-1 our power. Perfect power is 9-1 and 10-1 and bigger the rest. Okay, Rory, like the look of this race. Creative Force, I'm sure this is probably his target all season, but he's got some serious opposition.
Yeah, this is a tough race. And my time form race card again says high favourite. I don't believe that for a second. I think low numbers will be favourite here. You've only got to look at the last meeting. Obviously, the last couple of meetings at Ascot, they're not using the full width of the course, and the stalls will be on the far side. Now, in the big 7 furlong handicap here at the last meeting, they all just made a beeline for the far rail. And I think that's what they're going to do again. We've seen this a couple of times in the Sprint Cup in recent seasons, where the race has developed against the far rail, and it tends to get messy as a result. Those who are drawn high have got to find a way of tucking in or blasting out and trying to make the running. And I fancy one who ran well from a very high draw last year, who's a lot better drawn this time around, and that's Art Parr, Stolly at this time. I think he was drawn 20 of 20 last year, and he ran pretty well to be fourth on very similar ground. Of those drawn high, only two featured at all on the finish. He finished a length in front of Highfield Princess that day, with the low numbers doing best. He was given a long break before making his comeback over 7 furlongs. York in August. He found firm ground against him in the Sprint Cup at Haydock. Always happy to throw out Haydock form. And then he won the Renaissance Stakes for the second year running at the Curra last time out, looking right back to his best. Conditions will be fine for him. I've always thought he'd be at his best as a 5-year-old. And with a kind draw and a light season behind him, I think he's really solid.
Lovely. Our power for Rory. We'll let him get a glass of water. Poor old Rory. He desperately needs one. Frank, usually a good man for a pint of orange during the podcast. Right. Our power for Rory. Yeah, pint of orange. Every time. You've got a pint. Is that my waddy or what is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
My waddy. And nothing else in it?
No. I did have a few drinks at the weekend.
Not like you.
Playing golf in Port Marnock. And
that's not like
afterwards, not the fancy Port Marnock, the less fancy. It's still fancy enough, like, do you know what I mean? But it's not, you know, real snobbery. But went out Saturday night, yeah. So still not right, to be honest.
Remember the first time I went to a country pub when I was a youngster, and you know, in Dublin, when you ask for a splash with something with your drink, you usually have to pay £3 or £2 for. You go to a country pub and you say, "Oh, can I get a vodka blacker?" Or whatever. I didn't drink that, but something like that. And they just put the my waddy on the bar. And away you go. I was astounded. This is just magical.
Country people are just better folk, PK.
That's why I moved down. Right. Give us your thoughts on the Champions.
I agree with Rory. Like, look, Rohan and Creative Force, you can see it. You can see where they're headed in the market. Rohan's 4 from 5 at the track. His only defeat was in this last year. Very impressive again with winning the walk. Him off, top weight, off mark of 109 this year. And again, last time in the Ben Ball Stakes. Creative Force won this last year, narrowly beaten in the Platinum Jubilee. Very obvious chances, the two of them. I'd agree with that power. He was my second choice in the race. And I'd echo what Rory said. He ran a massive race considering the draw last year when he was 20. The first three home were drawn 5, 2, and 4. So he ran a huge race to not be beaten very far and forth. And he was very impressive in the car again last year, the same race he was impressive in last year. And he's won it again this year coming in here. I think he's very solid at 5 places around the 8-1 mark. But I just think at the price, I'd take a swing on Garris. Like in the last 5 years, we had winners at 16-1, 33-1, and 28-1. And this is 20-1. Look, he's not got the most consistent profile ever, but And you could argue that his best form is when he's running Deauville, but his last run was a career best. He was beaten a length, never nearer, over 6.5 furlongs in the Pre-Maurice de Geest, in first, Highfield Princess. She's come out and bowled up in the non-top, the Flying Five. Second was Minzal, impressive winner of the Breakfast Pint Cup. The form is solid. Fourth was Rohan, who's second favourite. He placed in the Spring Cup and won the last, as I've said. He hasn't run since. He handles cut. I don't think the run at Deauville was a fluke. He has some decent form, while a brilliant Group 1 form. But he's drawn 7, in around the pace, at powers in 8, Gobert's goal is in 9, Brad the Brief is in 5. So he should hopefully get a bit of a toe into the race. And just with 5 places, 20-1, and considering the strength of that form in France, I think he's a big price. And I'll chuck a few bob each way in him.
Nice one. That's Gareth at 20-1 at the time of recording, while Rory with our pair at 8-1. 5 places, as Frank rightly said, for the Champion Sprint. Move on to the Champion Fillies and Mares, which is a Group 1 over 1.5 miles. And welcome back to the track, Emily Upjohn. We haven't seen you in a while. She's the 3-1 favourite for Messrs. Satori and Gosden's. Eternal Pearl for Charlie Appleby and William Buick, fast improving 5-1. Ashada for Varian and Crowley is 6-1. 7-1, Sweet Lady and Mimikyu, also for John Teddy Gosden. 8-1, Sela Rosa for William Haggis and 10's Bar. Straight back to you, Frank, for this one. Emily Upjohn, I actually haven't done a huge amount of research. What happened to her last night? Was there anything that came alert or?
Not that I'm aware of. Probably one of my better, maybe my tipping hasn't been great this season, but when we were having our pricing conversation, I did argue that I thought Emily Upjohn would come last in the King George. It was one of the few good calls I made this year, but I think it's a very, very tricky race. I don't think you put a line through too many of these. He was wide open. Look, if Emily Upjohn comes back to the sort of form she showed earlier in the year, she'd have a massive chance. But she has been off a fair while now, and the hood is on. I want to take a chance at the prices on Ross Carberry, not just because it's in West Cork. But
I was just going to say.
Yeah, it's a lovely spot. Go down to the Warren there, they have a grand pitch and putt course there as well. Their brother will be down there on holidays a fair bit, but it's a grand spot. But massive improver of Paddy Toomey this year, going from winning a Dundalk Maiden and a Sligo Handicap at the start of the season. Sligo Handicap was off a mark at 83, to winning twice at true Group 3 level and being touched off in Group 1 pre-Jean Romanet at Deauville. Paddy Toomey, I've said it before, he's running at a 30% strike rate at Ireland this season, absolutely phenomenal. Finally got his first winner in the UK with Treasure Trove at York earlier in the season. Ross Carberry's Group 3 win at Leopardstown was over 6 miles when beating Emily Dickinson. It's fair enough form. Emily Dickinson was beaten 3 lengths in the St. Ledger, a length and a half in the Prix de Royou. You know my French again, absolutely.
Yeah, I think you did very well.
I thought it was a grand run, the Irish St. Ledger, when a never near 8 lengths forward behind Kyprios and Hamish. Both of them have come out one since. We know how good Kyprios is. She is more of a stare. And if it was slowly run and turn into a bit of a turn of foot race, I don't think she'd have too much of a chance. But if it was strongly run and she wasn't too far back, I think she'd be finishing strongly. And again, she's double figure price, so I'd take a swing on her each way in a race that's wide open.
Yeah, 4 places as well we're going instead of the 3. Yeah, Ross Carberry 12-1 for Billy Lee and Paddy Toomey. Billy Lee going to Ascot, Colin Keane not. So Colin Keane focusing on that champion's title at Leopardstown.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Right, Rory, Ross Carberry for Frank, where are you looking?
I think you want to be with something at a price in this race. It looks very open. So you said Emily Upjohn's got a very good chance on paper based on the on her run on the Oaks. But that form hasn't worked out terribly well. The 3-year-olds have been slagged off all season for being very moderate. And you can't forget how moderately she ran at Ascot last time out. So the addition of a hood here just puts you off backing her at a shortish price. You can give a chance to quite a lot of horses in this race. I'll take 2 against the field. There are extra places, but I'm inclined to go win only. because neither of them has got a tremendously upwardly mobile profile. The pair of them might just not be as good as they were. But on their best form, they would arguably be the best two in the race. And that's Alba Flora, who was beaten a short head in the race last year. She was beaten by Ashada. She's now 6 pounds better off with Ashada. I know that's weight for age, but the form book suggests that Ashada hasn't really improved from 3 to 4. Alba Flora, she's had two runs this season. The first of them, she was beaten favourite when odds on for the Ormond Stakes at Chester. She was beaten by Hamish, well, she's beaten by several horses. Hamish won that race, but she was made odds on to beat him that day and a few others. She was the last horse off the bridle. She travelled really well through the race, threw down a challenge early in the straight and looked like she was going to win. She traded 2 to 1 on in the run that day and then gave the impression that she needed it. You know, she's her head's come up as if she's just struggling for fitness, and she ended up being looked after and finishing 5th that day. That's not a great run, but I thought it was better than the bare result. The worrying run for her was last time at Longchamp. The interesting thing between the Ormond and the Vermeil is that she wasn't seen at all. You'd have thought the Hardwick would have been on her radar, but she's clearly had an issue or two, and she made her comeback in the Vermeil, and she looked really rusty there. She was never in a challenging position, and she finished a well-beaten last. Only beaten 10 lengths in the end, it has to be said, but she's run well below form. Sweet Lady won that, and obviously it's easy to say that, well, Sweet Lady should have no trouble confirming form with Alba Flora, but Alba Flora has run her best two races at Ascot. Second in this race last year, conceding weight to the four horses around her. The winner and the third, fourth and fifth were also three-year-olds getting weight from her. She ran an absolute cracker. And in her reappearance last year, she won by a mile in the Buckhound Stakes. And the filly she beat by 7 lengths came out and won by 6 lengths in listed company next time out. So the form is really solid. She hasn't entirely built on that. But the fact that she bounced back to form in this race last season shows that, you know, she's still good enough to win a race like this. The jury's out as to whether she's... It's not a question of training on. You never worry about whether a horse is trained on from 4 to 5. It's a case of, with a filly, whether she's just had enough or she doesn't fancy it so much anymore. But I think I wouldn't be drawing that conclusion based on two runs. As I said, she went really enthusiastically through the race in the Ormond, and then last time out is the one you've got to forgive. But it was her first run for several months, and it doesn't take a genius to work out that she might have had an issue between the two. So hopefully the run in France has brought her on for this, and this has always been the aim. And compared to Ashada, she's a massive price for this. The other one I throw a few bob at is Very Elegant, who's been called all the names under the sun this year because, this whole issue about her connections wanting to get her a run in the arc, and then the fact that she was essentially balloted out of the race. There have been a lot of comments about how unfair that was in some quarters, but a lot of people saying, well, she's clearly not any good. You know, there were 20 horses better than her in the race, so they can't really complain. Well, her CV stacks up really well. She's a 7-year-old now, and the signs are this season that she's not quite as good as she was, but she would have picked these up and carried them, 18 months ago. And there is this notion that we slag off Australian form as if it's nowhere near as good as UK form. And yes, it's maybe slightly easier for certain horses to run up sequences in Australia. And there are a lot of Group 1 races down there, including handicaps. But Very Elegant has shown for a long time that she is a top-notch race mare. And I think she's a dangerous one to dismiss. I was very surprised to see she was priced up at 25 to 1 in the week. She's a wee bit shorter now, but she's not that short. She's 20s now, and when you consider the races that she's won, and if you look at the awful ride that Mark Zara gave her at Longchamp last time, you certainly mark her up for that. She clearly has nothing to find. The question is, the look of her form suggests she's sort of ever so slightly regressive. But I think it wouldn't be the biggest surprise at all to see her bounce back to her best. She's been trained this season to peak in early October. That's always been the plan. So I would expect her to step up on the run from Longchamp last time out in the Prix de Wailleur, and she looks a player to me, so I couldn't leave her alone at 20s.
Yeah, so Alba Flora and Very Elegant there for Rory at nice prices, win only though. We are going 4 places whilst Frank going in also with a bigger priced horse in the shape of Ross Carberry, who you are going each way, I assume, Frank. I assume you'll go each way.
Yeah, I'll have a small each way.
All right, we'll have a small.
Wouldn't be very strong, but I just think it's wide open.
Yeah. Be a nice conversation between the owners of Very Elegant with their trainer, Francie Graffard, if his other filly wins the race and beats Very Elegant into second. I'm sure they'll have a very interesting conversation. Anyway, 320 is the QE2. It's the big mile race, obviously won by Bayid last year. Oh, Bayid this year, he's going up in trip for the Champion Stakes. So we have a hot favourite in Inspiral 4, John and Teddy Gosden, even money as we record. Modern Games is 7-2 for Buick and Appleby, 6-1 The Revenant. Ryan Moore, an eye-catching jockey booking for Francie Graffard, 7-1 Jadumi for Simon Ed Crisford, who we saw winning here in Ireland on Irish Champions Weekend. And then it's double figure odds the rest. I'll go straight back to you, Frank. Right, Frank, I know you. And despite this being my show, you are the man who puts all the tips up and you are not going to tip Inspiral. I'm fairly confident.
Yeah, you're right.
Yes.
I haven't gone for a massive price, but I just think the differential between Inspiral and Modern Games is too big. When you look at Modern Games and you look at his, particularly his form at a mile, his only defeat was in the Sussex Stakes when he was less than two lengths behind Bayid. He was a wide margin winner of the Group 1 Wood by Mile last time. At the second, has finished second at Group 11's next start at Keeneland. The time was decent. Modern Games, of course, won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf last year in his first start at Mile. He won the French 1000 Guineas in fine style. Didn't appear to stay when he was third at the Prix de Jockey Club, when he was sent off 2-1 favourite. And probably beaten 5 or 6 lengths by Videni. But Videni's shown himself to be top class, finishing second in the Arc, winning the Eclipse. The pre-Jean Pratt then, he ran over 7 furlongs and I think they didn't go that hard that day and it turned into a sprint and he just got done for, really. He just turned into a sprint and he didn't have that kick that the rest did. He was beaten, I think, 1.5 lengths in fifth. I think the ground was ideal. The yard remained in form and I think his form is every bit as strong as Inspiral. So I think the gap between them is too big. And Modern Games for me, win.
Lovely. Win bet on in Modern Games. By the way, pop into a Paddy Power shop if you want to have a bet in the QE2. And if you use your play card, you get a free bet in the race up to a tenner. Simple as that. If you fancy a bet in the QE2 for free. Rory.
I think I'd want a free bet. To be honest. I don't massively like Inspiral. I thought it was very interesting that Connections had come out and said that Chiefly Park, that is, had come out and said that she is the best they've ever bred. And I find it very, I always find it strange when people want to say how good their horse is before a race, rather than saying, you'll find out how good this horse is in the race. It's almost like, oh, she might be over the top, so we'll better say how brilliant she was before her terrible run makes that look bad. I've never seen the reason why particularly breeders need to say how good their horses are, because the information is there in the public domain. Based on Group 1's one and international classifications and all the rest of it. So I thought that was interesting. Maybe I'm reading too much into that. I was originally slightly concerned about the fact that she's not been seen since winning the Jacques Le Marois, which is it's hard to get a handle on that form because I like the horse that she beat that day, but the horse that she beat that day hasn't really achieved an awful lot as David Simcock, 3-year-old whose name escapes me at the moment. Light Infantry looked very good last back end. But in terms of what he's actually achieved, you wouldn't say that beating him in neck represents truly top class form. She was very impressive, obviously, in the Coronation Stakes. But again, it's not difficult to suggest that the Coronation wasn't a particularly strong contest. They blamed the quick turnaround for her defeat in the Falmouth. And that's the reason why they've come here without a prep. There was talk of them going for the Matron Stakes. There was talk about going for the Sun Chariot. But I think John and Thady Gosden didn't want to run her again before this race. The Sun Chariot came a fortnight before, and obviously it was 3 weeks between Royal Ascot and her defeat in the Falmouth, and that was put down to the quick turnaround. So they wouldn't really want to run her a fortnight before this. So I can, that stacks up. The reason that running her here, rather than giving her a prep, Would normally be a worry, but it does stack up that their concern with her is that she probably needs a break between her races. And she might well be the very best of these. As I said, you know, the fact that she won by almost five lengths at Royal Ascot is telling. She does handle good to soft ground. The vast majority of her form was on quick ground, but she did win the Filly's Mile last season on softish ground at Newmarket. But I'm not mad to back her at a short price. I think Frank's probably got this spot on with Modern Games representing a bit of value. I think he is a slightly better on quick ground. I mean, it was firm when he won a Woodbine last time out, the Woodbine Mile, and he absolutely destroyed them that day. The Canadians are not the greatest bunch in the world, it has to be said.
At horse racing.
Oh, they're wonderful. Oh, you gotta love the Canadians.
well, you just said the Canadians.
the grade one horses in Canada are not always the greatest currently. But yes, we love the Canadians. Go Canucks, Justin, and all the rest
of
us.
He's a great man. He's a great man. Trudeau.
Stop.
All right. So kind of a token selection of Modern Games there, but Frank certainly keener on him and Spiral maybe want to watch, even money at the
obviously,
time
obviously, just to say, if we do get the rain that they're half expecting and half not expecting, that brings the Revenant right back into it again. You know,
for sure. That's a good shout. If it does go softer than I suppose Revenant.
I would trust Modern Games okay on good to soft ground. On genuinely soft ground, I would definitely switch ships to the Revenant.
Okay, Mounties, stay back. We're okay. We still love you, Canada. Right, the 4 o'clock is the big one, the Champion Stakes, and well, we've got a potentially a crowning. This time of Baid, who's bidding to do what Frankel did and remain unbeaten. There's obviously plenty of people talking about him in the realms of Frankel. He's 1-4 at the time of recording Baid. It's 9-2 Adyar. It's great to see Adyar there because he's hopefully going to give him a race. Bay Bridge for Sir Michael Stout, who has faltered at this level now this season, is 10-1. Dubai Honor 25s, My Prospero 25s, 33s Royal Champion, Helvig Dream 50-1, Stone Age, and 101 McSweeney, who will, if it does go soft, potentially run a big race, but he will need it a bog. Okay, I'm going to go back to you, Rory. Obviously, I'm going to assume you both fancy Baid will win. There are a myriad of ways of getting involved in here, be it tricast, forecasts, or lengthen your odds, or back and horse to be placed. So if you fancy something outside of Baid, I'm all ears.
I think it depends on the ground to a degree, doesn't it? Adyar is the obvious one to back if you think Baid might be beaten. Because, you know, Adyar or Adyar, his form from last season reads very, very well. He won the Derby on easy ground. He was very impressive when he won the King George on his next start. But he found very soft ground ebbing his stamina or stopping him a little bit in the arc. It was still a better run than he was given credit for at the time. But he was disappointing in this race last year. That's a little bit of a concern on softish ground. Without the rain, I'd give him a decent chance, but the possibility of it turning very soft again, given that he was disappointing last year, is a concern. They've deliberately given a much lighter campaign. He just ran in a conditions race at Doncaster, where he looked very impressive. But I think he'd definitely prefer, if the ground was on the good side. And of course, we know that he's probably a better horse at a mile and a half as well. So there's limited upside to backing Adyar if you're looking to collect just on the place money, which is essentially what a lot of people are doing, betting each way against Baid. And with that in mind, it's a wee bit of a struggle. I think My Prospero could be the way forward for each way players. Don't think this horse can win the race. But he's got a bit of form and soft ground. I know he was placed in a novice on his debut on soft ground, and his runs this season have been either good or good to firm. He's one of the few horses in the race who's still progressing. And the thing I like about My Prospero is just the fact that he's the stable second string. I do love the old stable second string, or stable third string, I should say, because Dubai Honor's in here, who ran an absolute stormer last year. So being the sort of, on paper, the third string, you'll end up getting a bigger price about him than you should. I don't know why people have to. It tends to be something that punters go through. You look at a race and you try to make it simpler. It's a puzzle. If you can take something out of the puzzle to make the whole thing simpler, you do. And identifying which is the trier from a yard in a race, tends to be a process that punters go through. And once they've worked out what the top horse for the yard is, they completely ignore the other one or the other two. That's less likely to be the case in a Group 1 race. But I think my Prosper will end up going off a bigger price than he should, simply because the stable aren't expecting to win with him. But that still doesn't take away from his place claims. And I think William Haggis will be absolutely delighted to see my Prospero run into the frame in second or third here. So I think he may end up providing a bit of value. But it's one of those, it's not a great betting race unless you are scratching out a living, getting place returns on bad each way bets. And it's ever so slightly grubby, isn't it? But that's the way I would go with this race. It's more than possible with a Group 1 race, with a horse like Baid having his final start. You can just watch this and enjoy it for him.
What?
But if you have to be a punter's punter in this race, then a small each way bet in my Prospero might not be the worst way forward.
Of course, you don't have to have a bet in any race. You can indeed enjoy it. And I'm sure a lot of people will just sit back and enjoy Baid. Frank, that will be another interesting conversation, by the way. If William Haggis is my Prospero, Nabs shake kisses Baid on the line, and then William says, well, you know, sorry.
He hammered Baid a bit of work last week.
Yeah, whoops. Oopsie.
I come down the same horse, but in a different market. And we have Betting Without ADR and Baid, and we have my Prospero at 4-1, which I think is very fair. Baybridge is 10-11 in that market, to buy Honor 7-2. When you look at my Prospero beaten on debut by Claymore's won a group level this year at Royal Ascot, albeit being reached for the moon, probably wasn't the strongest renewal race. Got off the market, Newbury beating Thesis. Thesis won the Britannia, then beat Reach for the Moon at Sandown, a listed race over a mile, was probably very unlucky not to win the St. James's Palace. You can pick loads of holes at St. James's Palace. It's not the strongest form in the world at all. But he went to St. Cloud in July and won a Group 2 there. The third, Junko, has run really well since. He was beaten half length by Al-Hakim at Deauville, and he ran really well in the pre-dollar when beaten ahead by Anmat. So there's a bit of substance in that form at least. And I just think he's very much unexposed, improving type. And, you know, you take the two out of it, and if he's ridden a little bit to pick up the pieces, you could definitely see him finishing third behind the two. And I think 4-1 in the market without ADR and Baid is probably a touch big, I think.
Right, yeah, that you can find if you select Betting Without on the app or on the site, and then there's three different options. There's Betting Without Baid, Betting Without ADR, or Betting Without both of them. It's the third option, so it can't...
Betting Without option C.
Option C. Option C, my Prospero without Ediar and Baid. So Frank's found a way anyway into the Champion Stakes. So really looking forward to that race. I know it's probably not the greatest betting heat, but
At the same time, you just hope Baid wins nicely. If you could win the same style that you are, could be great. That's what you'd be hoping for.
The great thing about betting in the without market is that you don't have to boo Baid through the race like you would if you're betting each way against them. So that's, if you don't want to be ashamed of yourself after the race, then that's maybe the way to do it.
Quite a few horses have been knocked here. Trushan, the most hated horse in training. We had Very Elegant. She's had her knockers. And now we're knocking Baid as well. Changes the name of this from the Horse's Mouth to the Horse Knocking Podcast.
If booing horses are getting you ashamed, you'd be ashamed a lot of the time. Not just from horse racing, because that'd be way down the list of things to be ashamed of.
Last race on Champions Day is, as always, the has been this big mile handicap, the Balmoral Handicap, and it is a puzzle wrapped in an enigma, wrapped in all that other stuff, crosswords, etc. It is going to be six places each way on site, so that'll help. Six is the field, Tyrrhenian Sky for Varian and Atzeni, 6-1 also for Blue for You, who's been a wonderful horse this season. Migration is 8-1, that's been nibbled at from 10s for David Minussier. Sweet Believer also 8-1, 9-1 Bashkirova. I'm not going to read the rest of them, there's loads of horses. Rory, this race, actually, I was just looking at a few of the recent winners. You can get a fair springer in the market in this, kind of like we do sometimes in the Hunt Cup, and something got off stupid silly, but still running very well.
Yeah, I guess Lord Glitters was a big gamble when he won this race, wasn't he? Into 3-1, and Aldarley was well punted last year. And if you've got the nerve to lay one out for this race, then fair play to you. But because of the time it comes in the season, and because of how many good handicaps are at Ascot through the year, You'd need to have balls of steel to aim at this race and nothing else, which is what you need to do if you're going to get one really well handicapped for a contest like this, or indeed, you know, a horse is going to prove to be a Group One horse in time, as we've seen obviously with one or two winners of this contest, Lord Glitters being the obvious one. Mm. My problem with this race is that if you have to be rated 100 plus to qualify for a handicap, there's not an awful lot of scope for you being unexposed at the trip. And all the interesting horses have been balloted out of this, says a man who backed Empire State of Mind at 33s during the week. and there really aren't that many who you could call well handicapped or progressive. Again, I think low draws will come out best. And most of the fancied horses are drawn quite high. Obviously, you can still win from a high draw, but you've got to work your way into the race. And it's possible, I suppose, on the day that they'll decide that the stands rail is the place to be and they'll stay there. But there have been a couple of runnings of this where, you know, you've either had two groups and the group on the far side have had the best of it, or they all want to get towards the far rail. That's the way I think it's liable to pan out. If you watch the sprint earlier on, you'll get an idea of where they want to be. And you get an idea from the result of that whether there's a draw bias. I've come down without a huge degree of confidence, I have to say, on Perotto. He's drawn one of 20 here. We've still got the reserves, but I'd imagine it's always a massive surprise when a reserve gets a run in the UK, and yeah. I don't see that happening again. We probably will have two non-runners, but they'll come out after the deadline. Perotto is well treated on last season's form, but he hasn't really clicked this year. But again, he's either been running in conditions races or group races, and that doesn't enormously suit him. His last run was in the Cambridgeshire, where he was disappointing, and he appears to have plenty to find, to be perfectly honest, on what he's shown this year. But he is, of course, in distance, but he won the. The Britannia last season in very good style. He's well suited by a big field handicap over 7 furlongs or a mile. He doesn't have much form on soft ground, but he handled heavy as a juvenile. He was third in a big sales race as a juvenile on heavy ground at Newmarket, and he ran very well on soft ground the only time he's tried it. Most of his form this season has been on a quicker surface. As I said, he's not that easy to fancy on what he's shown recently. But actually, when you dig into his form and look at the horses who've been beating him and the races he's been in, he's been running pretty close to his mark. He's dropped now to 100. He's racing over 103 in the Cambridgeshire. It does take a leap of faith to back him, but the softer ground could well help him. And stall one could help him as well. While Harry Davis is claiming 3 off his back, I've actually napped one from the Tregoning Yard tonight at Chelmsford. So I'll be delighted to see if that goes and wins. Because Marcus Tregoning is one of those trainers who tends to finish the season off fairly well. He doesn't run that many horses. He tends to be selective in where he runs them. But as a result, they tend to see their seasons out better than some who race more often. So on last season's form, he's got a big chance of 100. I'm just hoping that... that he bounces back to his best under conditions that should suit. As I said, the Britannia is always an absolutely red-hot handicap, and he won that last season and ran well afterwards. And he's just been in races that he probably couldn't win most of the season. You've only got to forgive the Cambridgeshire run when he was 20th last time out. But although he was fairly well drawn that day, essentially he'd never got a chance to get involved. And I'm happy enough to forgive that one run. I have a feeling he might do better back on softer ground, even though he's not seen it for a while. And yeah, he'd be 20-1 plus. So I'm happy to take a chance, because as I said, there's nothing in here you'd be massively scared of being ahead of the handicapper. So you've got to take a chance on something at a price. And while I'm not massively confident, he'll work for me.
That's fine. Got a feeling it won't be your nap. That's Perotto in the Balmoral Handicap Show for 440 currently as Roy said, 16-1. All right, Frank.
Yeah, I found it very tricky. Normally, I'd be mad into these handicaps, but as Roy said, there's nothing there, you know, sticking out as terribly obvious or terribly unexposed. I was wanting to try and give another chance to symbolise. Look, he was running really well this time last year. Finished second in the race off this mark. Probably not from the greatest of draws last year. And Callum Hutchison takes off five this time round, but was a pretty lifeless run last time over seven furlongs here. Now, I wouldn't be shocked to see him bounce back, but yeah, like I think we're 12 or 14, the 16 out there. It's probably about right, because you're taking a chance on him. If it did rain and the ground got soft, I'd give a chance to Stormy Antarctic. Like, he's 9 year old, he's, you know, been campaigning in group list level for a fair while now. But his mark has come down from this time last year. He was rated 110. He's down to 103. He's drawn 6. You'd give him a squeak if the rain did come and the ground got soft or any worse. But I'm going to take a chance on Vash Kirova for William Haggis. She won the Group 3 Prince Elizabeth Stakes at Epsom. The second, Pop Topova. The fourth, Statement. And the sixth, Mrs. Fitzherbert, have all won Group 3 since. She found Group 2 company too hot at Royal Ascot, but she was only 5-2 against Saffron Beach that day in the Duke of Cambridge Stakes. She had a little break, came back at York in the Group 3 Strensel Stakes against the boys. Wasn't up to that either. It's only her second handicap ever. Won last October in a handicap at Newmarket off America 92. I'm hoping she can get away with the draw in 19. Probably not ideal, but she was just one that wasn't exposed, and you know, she might be better than a handicapper, and if the draw isn't too much of an inconvenience, she might go well, but like as Rory said, I wouldn't be hugely confident.
Yeah, that's fair enough. It's a very difficult race. William Haggis got a few in there, including a reserve, Montasib, who, if he does get in, will be interesting. And William
Haggis could be an interesting race for the trainer's championship, isn't it?
Yes, the Trainers' Championship could be up for grabs as well, which we very rarely talk about on the show because not that many people really care about it. But John Gosden, John Thady Gosden, if they do...
I'm sorry for mentioning it, PK. Jesus.
It's my show. right. that is a couple of each-way pokes. Bashkarov, but maybe she'll be G'd up by the slight from Cheveley Park saying that she's not the best bred filly that Cheveley Park have had. She runs earlier on in the card. And... of course, all the national horses that they buy. Envoy Allen, I know they didn't breed him. Maybe he's the best bred horse they've got. right, we will move on to... we'll get Naps and Next Best shortly, but there is a decent card at Leopardstown. I asked Frank to have a quick peek at it on Saturday afternoon. Frank, was there anything that caught the eye?
I take a chance in the Killavullen Stakes, because obviously there's not prices there at the moment. But a Bold Discovery, I think, might be... fair enough price. Really impressive debut at Nace last month over seven furlongs. Easily beat Peacock Opera. The third, Brighter London, came out and beat King of Scotia at Dundalk last week. King of Scotia run really promising on debut. And actually, he runs here in this Group 3 as well. So it looks fairly decent form. The fourth, Nal Valley, was fifth in a listed race at Dundalk. Went 4 lengths behind Cairo. Cairo is likely to be, you know, top of the market or near top of the market here. So you kind of have a line into the favourite. I don't think it's the strongest renewal of the race. I just really liked the way he was obviously professional. He bounced out in front and made all, but I liked the way he won. And he might be a spot of value in the Killavullen Stakes. And giving one last chance to Kazana in the 1 mile 4 Premier Handicap. Is that the October Handicap at 5:30?
It is, yeah.
Caught the eye on occasion. She won that ladies' trophy, the Curragh, last year, 6-6-1, very impressively. Don't think it was a fluke either. And that form had worked out relatively well. She ran this race last year off a mark of 83, and she was sixth, beaten, I think, just about 3 lengths, just under 3 lengths, again, staying on. She ran well here in May, beaten less than 2 lengths off a mark of 82. She runs here off 80. Look, she didn't really run too much of a promising race on Champions Weekend here. And the last day at the Curragh last week, she was really well backed for the Ladies' Trophy again to defend her title, should we say. And she completely blew the start. She missed the break and her race was over. But she was really well backed into 3-1 favourite that day. She's down to a mark of 80. Look, if she can break on terms and looking at her form, I reckon she could be a wild price. I'd give her one last chance.
Yeah, I remember talking about her before Irish Champions Weekend. This is Kazana, number 16 in the 5:30 Leopardstown. I thought she ran a race. She had to go round the field, didn't she, at Leopardstown?
Oh, no, she did. Like, it wasn't terrible at all. Like, as in, she wasn't well placed or anything.
Exactly.
It was fair enough. Like, you know, but again, it wouldn't be one that was jumping out. Yeah, she's going to win next time. But even at the Court of the Last, considering how much ground she lost at the start, she ran a fair race. And if she can just, you know, if she can break and maybe get a little bit of luck in running and maybe not have to, they do tend to hold her up. So you just don't want her having to come around the whole field.
Yeah.
But if she got the breaks, yeah, she could.
Very interesting. Kitsana. And in the 345, you mentioned Bold Discovery there, the Killable and Stakes, who's got, if this is such a thing, an owner upgrade. Used to be owned by Fergus Galvin, now in the Mark Chan Silks.
I'd say Fergus Galvin got a few quid all right out of that.
I'm sure Fergus is doing fine. Bar for my diatribe there of calling an owner upgrade from Fergus Galvin to Mark Chan. Sorry, Fergus, but I'm sure the cash that you got for Bold Discovery more than makes up for it. Shane Foley keeps the ride. I'm sure Frankie may be riding at some stage because given his association with that owner. All right, there's a couple to watch out for at Leopardstown. We've got Paddy's Pick 5 back this Saturday. What a Pick 5 it'll be. 100 grand up for grabs. It's absolutely free to play. And Frank Hickey and Rory De Largue are going to give us the five winners. Okay, the five races are all at Ascot. The first race is the 2 o'clock, the Champion Sprint. And this is headed in the market, or likely to be headed in the market, by Creative Force and Rohan. Neither of you fancied those two. So I'm going to give the casting vote to Rory. Unmute yourself and tell us who wins.
I didn't need you to tell me that time, but there you go. Art Power hopefully wins the sprint.
Lovely. The 240 champion fillies and mares. Emily Upjohn again ignored by R2. And by the way, obviously, favourites don't win any. As we've found out the last few weeks, favourites aren't winning many of these Paddy's Pick 5 races. Of the two, I'm going to give the casting vote. Both were big prices. I'm going to go for Frank. You get the casting vote.
Yeah, I'll go with Ross Carberry, but wouldn't be the most confident race now. I think if you get the winner of that, yeah, you can knock a fair few people out, I reckon.
You're in good shape. Ross Carberry then in the fillies and mares. The QE2, obviously Inspiral is going to be very popular, but not Rory, you weren't very keen on anything in that race. So back to Frank.
Yeah, Rory's point is probably fair, but Modern Games, as long as the ground doesn't go soft, looking at the Norwegian weather site, it has like max 2 mils, but by race time Saturday, so it should be okay. And I go at Modern Games, Turnover and Inspiral.
I'm going to be the cooler, and I'm going to put in Baye for the Champion Stakes. So if Baye gets beat, given every selection I've given so far and Paddy's Pick 5 has been beaten, I'm sorry. But Baye, I'm going to give as the cooler. And then Rory, you get the casting vote in the Balmoral Handicap.
In which case, I'm going with Perotto there.
Perotto. I tell you all, lads, if our selections come in, there'll be one winner. There'll be a max one winner.
The irony would be it'll be a 25,000 to 1 ACCA, and there'll be 34 winners.
Yeah. That could happen as well.
I'll tell you, PK, if you're this person who can stop a horse, we have to have a head to head against my missus, because I reckon she's the only solution, the only thing that's going to stop the war in Russia or in Ukraine. Sorry. I'll tell you a quick story. She left her AirPods in the gym there a few months back during Galway, and she rang me and said, "Oh, I left my AirPods in the gym, and when I went back, someone whipped them." And she was like, "Will you give me a horse there that'll win, so I can buy new AirPods?" So I said, "Grand." I had a look, and I gave her Flame of Air in Galway in a nursery, I think, was it? It was about 8 or 9 to 1. So I was like, "If you throw 10 or each way on that, it'll go the way to buying your AirPods." And anyway, I just got home, and the race was just jumping, so I watched it in the car. Flame of Air went and won. I was like, Jesus, finally the hoodoo was broken. She backed the winner. So I went in and said, "Did you back that horse?" "Oh no, I didn't bother in the end."
Unreal. It's always the way, isn't it? Why didn't you tell me he was definitely going to win, Frank? You only told me it might win.
Well, yeah.
You need to tailor your message for your audience. It's important.
Well, it was a winning tip. Fair play to Frank, but yeah. Right, lads, we need best bets on a very busy day's racing, a good day's racing, rather, busy day's racing. You fancy some big prices, folks. Right, I'll go to you, Frank, for your best bet.
I'm tempted to say Gareth. Go on.
Yeah.
Yours isn't going to be our power,
well,
is it?
Yeah.
Look, I'll go Modern Games. I'll go Modern Games in QE2, so. Okay. No, to be fair, to Rory, I am very wary of Our Power in the race, so I let Rory have Our Power, and I'll go Modern Games. I do fancy him to turn over Inspiral.
Modern Games in the 3:20 to beat Inspiral, but Gareth's definitely the next best in the 2 o'clock. All right, Rory.
Should I say the Revenant now, just to spoil everything? Our Power in the Champion Sprint.
Lovely. Our Power, who is in the 2 o'clock at Ascot. Those are the two best bets. Right, lads, we'll be back next week. We've got, this is basically kind of sort of the end of the flat turf season. I know there's more group one more group one to come. But next week is Friday's Cheltenham meeting. Is the I think they're called the showcase.
Do, yep.
The showcase meeting. Yeah. All right, Frank. Are you looking forward to that?
Yeah, we got a little bit of goods jump racing there on Wednesday at Punchestown, didn't we? To just whet our appetite a little bit.
It was nice to see Galvin out. Yeah, he went off a price too, didn't he?
Yeah, Adam Nicholson wasn't too bad. And I'm going to look like a fool on Monday's Racing Post because there's like a preview of the National Hunt season. And my novice hurdler to follow was Marine National. And this was written 10 days ago, but it's only going to be in the paper Monday. So it's going to be look like, you know, complete recency bias. Like,
so you put did like the way he won yesterday. He won on Wednesday.
He won on Wednesday. Really like jumping was very slick for first time out. Yeah, so he's a horse to be keeping an eye on.
That B Connell has got some serious ammunition this year.
And yeah, he the way he's going, he'll be arriving Paddy Toomey for that strike rate, won't he? He's absolutely
and Michael O'Sullivan, who's I believe got a retainership to Barry, which is you know, fair play to him.
He's doing a great job as well. He's absolutely made a flying start to this season, and he's been brilliant.
Well, watch out for that in the Racing Post, Frank Hickey's thoughts on the national season. But we'll be back next weekend for Cheltenham as well as Friday's with Frank. By the way, if you listen to this before Friday at Dundalk, you can always tune in to myself and Frank going through the action at Dundalk. And also he gives us a couple of selections, would you believe, at Nace, one of whom is running at Leopardstown. Great.
Which one was it? The JP one?
Yeah, Goody Two Shoes. Yeah, oh. he fancied her for the... She was treble entered this weekend and unfortunately he picked the wrong race.
Right, but anyway, the right colours, yeah.
Yeah, well, the right colours for him to be tipping up. We do like
our friends. Does he have a Chinese every Friday, does he?
I think it's not every Friday, but I think Kevin O'Ryan has... is partial. Shall we say? Partial is the word. They have some crack up there in Dundalk. There's a great clip of Kevin O'Ryan and Fran interviewing both Billy Lee and Colin Keane. I think it was last weekend at Dundalk. I think it's on Racing TV's feed. Really good. Given they're going hammer and tong for the title, they're clearly two lads who are good mates, and that's good. It's a good clip. Watch out for it. Right, not for me. We'll be back next week. Do check out Paddy's Pick 5. Link in the show notes if you want to get involved. Free to play. Back next week for Cheltenham and Dundalk. Talk to you then, folks.